Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
All right, I left last night's last national title game thinking, Mario Cristobal might be onto something, thinking that Oregon needs to get bigger, more physically imposing. I also left thinking about Oregon getting to the national championship twice in the last decade. Dave Bartu, College Football Matrix, great follow on Twitter, consultant to college programs, joining us now. Bartu, what'd you think about last night?
I loved it, man. I mean, it was kind of like a hot take dream come true because back in August when I was on the Feinbaum show, probably the only person in the country or the world at that time to say Alabama wasn't winning the title because the numbers were not in their favor.
What did you see in the numbers?
It wasn't the talent. They had the talent. It wasn't the schedule. The schedule was set up for them. What they lacked were quality coordinators. And literally, I mean, before last night, I was sitting there going, gosh, how do these guys be so bad as coordinators for their careers, or in the case of Lapoy, no experience at all, and have such great numbers and have it not catch up to them? And finally, in game 15, it caught up to them. But you look at those two guys, I mean, how many programs can do something like this? In fact, nobody can except Alabama, and they couldn't get it done. Loxley is their offensive coordinator. His career grade was D-. We're talking bottom 25% of all offensive coordinators before he took the Alabama job. And then you had Lapoy, who's never called plays before in his life, so we just gave him a C grade. And there has not been a single team win a national title game in the last 15 years. That started the season with both coordinators as C grade or worse. In fact, the only team to win one with a C grade at all was Auburn in their basically miracle season of 2010.
I look back at Oregon getting to the national title game in 2011, and you know, you see that they didn't have any players drafted in the first round of the subsequent NFL draft. You look at kind of the makeup of that team, and that is more impressive to me now after even seeing last night, because there was so much NFL talent on that field.
Oh, that you want to talk about an outlier. That was probably, of this century, there are two major outliers that made a national championship game. Two, okay? One of them was Virginia Tech way back when. I think they played Florida State, got beat 42-21. And at that time, they were in the Big East. So the schedule they had, it'd be kind of like an AAC team going undefeated and getting the national title game. But what Virginia Tech had was a number one draft pick quarterback, and that being Michael Vick. So that was a big outlier. The next big outlier was that Oregon team that you're talking about there. Because here we have a program that didn't recruit inside the top 10 and didn't have an NFL quarterback. If you notice that the teams that have made a national title game that recruit outside the top 10, Oregon with Mariota, you had what I just said, you know, before Virginia Tech with Michael Vick, you had Clemson in 2 years with Deshaun Watson. He lost one. He won the other one. And I believe he won that football game for them. He was the difference maker. But with that Oregon team, there was no NFL quarterback. And that was a huge outlier. That was Darren Thomas. He didn't even get drafted. I don't think he played, you know, even on a backup NFL squad or anything. So when you talk about fairy tale seasons, that one where Oregon played arguably the least talented national champion of this century in Auburn. All they had is Cam Newton and a bunch of everybody else's. That was an amazing opportunity. But that season, like I said, that is a Cinderella outlier for college football playoffs and national championships.
Dave Bartu, the College Football Matrix, is with us. Mario Cristobal came in the door at Oregon as the head coach saying, we need to recruit like Alabama. We need to go big. We need to get size. Today he's saying we need big physical wide receivers. And while I think that's great, that by itself, is that enough? And how quickly can you change who you are as an identity as a program?
Well, it just takes time. Right? I mean, it does take time to do this. You have to consider Oregon went through a four-year regression, basically the last 3 years of Helfrich, and then I still say they were regressing with Willie Taggart. And so, you know, these things just don't turn around that quickly, especially when you're trying to implement a new offensive culture where the game is slower. You don't have the pace anymore that the fans are accustomed to. You know, so you have a slower pace. You have a bigger style of player, apparently, that he's shooting for. Right now, at the beginning of the season, the Oregon's physicality index was equal to that of San Diego State. So there is a long ways to go for Oregon to get bigger. And without a lot of steroids, that doesn't happen overnight either, you know. And one recruiting class doesn't change things instantly as well. But, you know, it's a progression. So I think what Duck fans are happy with right now is they're seeing the sign of that progression in a top 10 class this year. But to expect it to morph into something as special as they had just 5 years ago, I think is setting the bar way too high right now.
Dave Bartu with us, College Football Matrix. The Pac-12 feels light years away from a national title game. Is there a program that you look at inside the Pac-12 that you go, hey, it's built to compete and can get there quicker than the others? Is it still Washington? Is it somebody else?
It's never been Washington. It's always been USC. It's never been Washington. Even right now. I mean, right now, there are no national championship contenders for the coming season out of the Pac-12. None. Do not bet any of them. None of them check off all the boxes. None of them have the talent, the coaching, and last year's efficiency performance to be a national championship contender in 2019. So I agree with you. It's behind right now. And one of the biggest reasons it's behind perception-wise is your top teams aren't that great. Oregon, UCLA, USC, Washington. You know, maybe throw in Stanford, but Stanford fan doesn't even care down there. You know, so those are your big brands. And when they're not doing well, I think nationally the perception is down for the conference. So right now, you know, Oregon with their recruiting and the emotion right now, they're trending up a little bit. I believe UCLA trended up at the end of the year with their efficiency. But their recruiting right now is you've got to be at DEFCON 2 if you're a UCLA fan. And USC tried to turn the corner for, 40 days? With an A-minus grade offensive coordinator, and it sounds like Cliff Kingsbury's already gone. So now they're back to nobody in Clancy, and the only one happy about that has got to be Pendergast so he doesn't get fired after next year. So, you know, I think what you're saying there, how far away is the Pac-12 from contending for a national title? I think it's as far away as either Oregon, Washington, or UCLA recruiting gets into the top 15, or as far away and as long as it takes USC to get their coaching staff right. And right now, it is 180 degrees wrong.
Alabama, after this football game, walks away feeling like they didn't give it their best shot. Clemson walks away feeling like it's the best team ever. Afterwards, Nick Saban tells Dabo Swinney, see you next year. Is it that simple? I mean, are we just going to see the same movie we've seen before? Is it on repeat, or is there a team out there like Texas or Oklahoma that can disrupt this thing?
I think there's always teams out there that can disrupt it. And I believe what we're seeing right now is a huge anomaly. When is the last time ever in college football we saw two teams making a run like this? And we've seen Alabama make, you know, I mean, they've made their run. They're a dynasty. We saw USC make a huge run. And if they actually had a good coach instead of Pete Carroll, they would have won a ton of national titles. Their talent advantage was huge. You had Florida State, I mean, they were top 10 for 86 consecutive years with Bowden. I mean, it was nuts. We just never had two teams to do this simultaneously. I really believe that there's certainly other teams out there that are capable of doing it. The question is, are the ones with the talent, are they close enough to disrupt this right now? And there's a lot of them, like you mentioned, Texas. I don't think Texas is close yet. I think they're at least 2 years away. Their efficiency is poor. They're not playing well as a team yet. You know, you look at somebody like Ohio State, massive overhaul of their coaching staff, huge downgrades everywhere. Ohio State is not a national title contender right now either. So, you know, you look at the Vegas line, who's number one and number two in likelihood of winning it next year, Alabama and Clemson, and they do check off most of the boxes. But if Alabama doesn't make some changes at the coordinator position, and obviously Loxley's leaving, if they don't upgrade that, I think they're going to find themselves in the same situation, whether it's against Clemson or somebody else, on the outside looking in, because they just can't coach the talent up enough.
You talk a lot about efficiency, and some of our listeners, you know, they say, okay, what does he mean by efficiency?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the efficiency, it's scoring efficiency is the key here, because it's a scoreboard. You have all these numbers. You hear, you're on social media or you listen to a football game, you hear announcers and writers and everybody talking about all of these stats, you know, pressures on the quarterback, third down conversions, you know, yards per play, blah, 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 blah. It all equates into the same thing, which is the efficiency of putting points on the board, or the efficiency of keeping teams from putting points on the board. So when I'm talking about efficiency, I'm talking about scoring efficiency and a team's ability to score per play. And it levels the playing field. So it doesn't matter whether you play fast or slow. It's all about how efficient you are every time you snap the ball on offense or every time you face a snap on defense.
When you look at the Pac-12, then, efficiency-wise, who are the top two or three teams in the Pac-12?
It was a bad year. I mean, this was a really inefficient year. For example, you look at Washington. Last year, they were top 10 in both offensive and defensive scoring efficiency. They were a very, very efficient team. They were number one in the conference last year. This year, their defense, again, in the top 10, but their offense fell to number 53. Completely unbalanced. In terms of their efficiency, Oregon, top 25 in offense, top 75 in defense. Again, an imbalance there. You look at Stanford, their efficiency numbers, neither one were in the top 25, and that was a rare season for them. It was a real down year for Stanford. You know, so you look across the board, Utah, top, I think they were number 20 in defensive scoring efficiency. Offense, 56. There was literally nobody in the Pac-12 that was even close to balance, and neither in the offense or defensive side, no team was in the top 25 in both. So it was ugly across the board for the Pac-12. But if you're looking for a ray of hope, no matter who you are a fan of, it means it's going to be wide open again next year, because those efficiencies will carry over. So there is a long ways to go from an efficiency standpoint in the Pac-12. Somebody's got to take advantage of this window of opportunity.
Dave Bartu, you're absolute gold. Thank you, man.
Take it easy, brother. You know where I'm at. Anytime.
The College Football Matrix. Absolute gold. I mean, he quantifies everything that you see, but you can't articulate. Because the eyeballs tell you, you know, and it's been said, like Malcolm Gladwell wrote a book called The Outliers. And one of the premises of it is, you know, you walk in, you look at something, it doesn't look right to you, you know, you can't put your finger on it. Bartu is the guy who comes in and quantifies that. You know, we all know the Pac-12 is nowhere near the title game. He tells you why. Leave it here. It's still in front of us. Ben Golliver talking some NBA. Stuart Mandel was in the stadium last night at Levi's Stadium. We'll talk to him about the infusion of orange that he has been seeing in the Bay Area. Also, the big splash still ahead. What'd you learn in the national championship game? What'd you learn watching that? 503-417-7575. Tell me what you learned. What were your takeaways? And by the way, do you think you could make the 43-year-old yard field goal that Cody Parkey missed? Remember Cody Parkey, the Bears kicker? Just we're talking about this just a couple days ago or day ago. Was this yesterday? You know, Parkey missed the kick, but there's a beer company that's come up with something interesting.
For the lead, ball put down, right footed kick is up, end over end. And now he hit the crossbar after he hit the upright. He hit the upright again, and the Bears are going to lose.
You think you would have made that field goal? Well, there's a brewery in Chicago that is challenging Bears fans who are bellyaching about Cody Parkey missing the 43-yard field goal attempt in their 16-15 loss to the Eagles. A brewery called Goose Island Brewing Company, in a brilliant marketing move, is saying that they don't believe Bears fans can make the kick. A lot of armchair kickers out there saying, oh, I could have made that field goal. Put your vape pens down, you know, adjust your sagging jeans, and go out and try to kick this field goal, right? Put your potato chip bag down. Stop criticizing Cody Parkey. They're holding a promotion. Goose Island is setting up field goal posts outside their tap room, and they are going to give patrons a shot at kicking a 43-yard field goal during brewery hours, of course. If you make it, you get free beer for a year. Free beer for a year. The problem is the kind of guy who wants free beer for a year is not inclined to be the kind of guy who makes a 43-yard field goal. I bet somebody's going to make it, but it's not going to be somebody who's going to be like, oh, I need to have free beer for the rest of the year. That guy's not making the field goal. That guy's falling, slipping. That guy's got a beer already in his hand when he's trying to kick the field goal. That's what's brilliant about this marketing campaign. Everybody's talking about Goose Island, and nobody who's going to take advantage of free beer for a year is going to make that field goal. Go to the phone lines. Tell me what you learned in the national championship game. I told you what I learned. 503-417-7575. Dre is in Portland. Dre, you lead us off.
Jay, and I had been saying this all year. Clemson has the same type dudes as Bama. And I saw that all year. This wasn't like that David Goliath. This was Goliath and Goliath last night. They recruit the same type dudes. And Clemson didn't play scared. I'm going to be honest with you, and I hate to say this, Alabama looked like Oregon State last night. That was the type of game that I saw. Clemson's talent, I mean, those dudes, and what they said at the end, I don't know if anybody caught it, but when he said, if you want to come to a place where your coach ain't dancing all in the locker room, that was that Suge Knight. That was that Suge Knight, man. Clemson going to start getting dudes. Thanks, Jay.
Appreciate it. It's true. Clemson had guys, and Alabama had not been, at least for a few years, in a battle like that. Like, Alabama's players did look a little shell-shocked. Like, I heard all the run-up to the game. Oh, these guys are going to be a factor on the defensive line, all that nonsense. Like, I don't even think Alabama might not even been the second-best team in the country. There's some teams that can make a case right now that they should have been in that game. Mark's in Portland, and he's called in. What's up, Mark?
Hey, how you doing? I want to first say I really enjoyed that game last night. I want to give you some numbers since I know you're a baseball guy. This is not a real playoff, as you've heard me say before, in my opinion. If you look at it from an at-bat chance, like going to the plate and getting a base hit, six SEC teams have been in this tournament. Two of them have won it, so they're batting .333. The ACC has had five teams in it and have won two of them, so they're batting .400. The Big Ten has had two teams in it and won it with the first team, and the other one didn't, so they're batting .500. And that's how my matrix numbers work in the fantasy D1 college football. Absolute big. It got exposed again last night, John. We do not know how good Ohio State is. Those three teams, Ohio State, Clemson, and Alabama, have dominated their conferences the last 5 years during this playoff. And Ohio State hasn't been afforded the opportunity that Alabama and Clemson and, you know, Florida State, their 1 year, the ACC, they have not been given the opportunity to show us if they're actually a dynasty-type team. So, when people come on here and tell me that, or you know, people in the committee tell us that Alabama's a dynasty, I look at 2011 to 2012. They won the national title in back-to-back years without beating anybody else's conference champion. They played two conference champions in this playoff and gave up 39 points a game. They didn't play Ohio State. We still don't know what Ohio State would do if they got on the field in a do-or-die game against Clemson or Alabama. And, you know, I think that last night proved that. It's not an NFL-structured playoff, and until they do that, it's never going to be legitimized in my mind.
How many teams need to get in? Because I'm looking at the final top 25, and I don't know if 8 will do it.
Well, you know, you have 5 power conference champions. I don't. The Big 12 is 0-4, so everybody's ragging on the Pac-12. They're 0-4 in these playoff games. The Pac-12 is 1-2. So you got to have all 5 power conference champions in and 3 at-large bids. At this stage, as long as I know that my team conference can control their own destiny, I don't care if they put 3 more SEC teams in. As long as I have my conference controlling their own destiny, I would be so mad right now as a Big Ten fan. They have a great conference, so you can't even use that argument. Why have they missed the playoffs the last 3 years? And that's what makes it illegitimate. It's never going to be real. We don't have any committees or matrix people for the NFL. We don't need them. And none of those numbers are going to work. I mean, everybody keeps saying Nick Foles is going to, you know, have no chance to win, and he has covered the spread in the last 5 games as an underdog, and I think it's the first time that's ever happened. And I will say also that the weak-ass Pac-12 has 3 quarterbacks leading their teams in the quarterfinals of the NFL playoffs. There's only 1 from the rest of the conferences. So, I mean, you know, it's just not – D1 college football is never going to be real to me until they have a traditional playoff. Every other sport does it. So it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Appreciate the phone call. Appreciate that, Mark. A lot of passion there. Roy's in Salem. Roy, what'd you think?
You know, first of all, John, Mark, quit talking about Ohio State. They got beat by a garbage Purdue team, and they almost lost to Maryland. I do not want to hear about Ohio State. Ohio State would have got drummed against Clemson. Ohio State should have took care. Purdue is horrible, and they got beat by Purdue. I don't want to hear anything. Ohio State got left off. That's the end of Ohio State. Okay, John, you're talking about the Pac-12, man. The Pac-12 is never. I'm just going to break it down on a macro level, man. You've got Pac-12 is, I don't know, in the next 20 years you win a national championship. And I'm going to tell you how I'm breaking it down. I'm breaking it down demographics, man. The Pac-12, like Bartu said, it was always USC. The only time Oregon and Washington is good is when USC is not good. Okay, when USC is operating on all cylinders, Oregon and Washington never have a chance. No team in the Pac-12 does. But it's never going to be like it used to be because the demographics of California, I keep saying it, have changed.
Yeah.
California is not the same California was in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Though I keep saying it over and over again. The athletes, they do not live in California anymore. They have moved to Texas. They have moved to Georgia. They have moved to Las Vegas. They moved to Phoenix. California, the only way the Pac-12 gets good again, if the only way it was good in the first place because of the demographics of California. Now that it's changed, I don't think you have a chance to be ever good again. You know, you cannot beat these teams if you are Oregon or Washington unless you go into the South and into Texas. And you know how many schools those athletes have to pass up to get to Oregon? I mean, you don't have that many high school players in Oregon and Washington. You're surrounded by states like Idaho and Montana. Those states aren't high school hotbeds. You have to fight. Mario Cristobal, yeah, he had a good recruiting year this year, but he's fighting an uphill battle going into Texas and Florida and Georgia every year, especially with those state schools are good. Georgia is good. Texas is back. Texas A&M is good. You're going to have to battle Clemson and Georgia and Florida for those players every year, and that's not sustainable. The only way you can come back if you Oregon or USC is California. And unfortunately, California is not the same old California.
Yeah, to that point, Roy, I saw a story on the demographics in the state of California, and Roy's right. California, the Hispanic population in California is growing. The Asian population in California is growing. It is still the number 2 state in the country when you talk about producing NFL talent. But people are projecting that will change over the next decade or 2 decades. What does that mean for someone like Oregon? Well, it means they're going to have to go into the South to recruit. And Mario Cristobal is attempting to do that. Can he do that? Can he get players to fly over SEC schools, to fly over Big 12 schools, to fly to Pac-12 country? That's the question. Kenneth is in Dallas. Kenneth, welcome.
Hey, John. That was a fantastic game last night, and it reminded me of why I work for a living, you work for a living, and we should never gamble on football. I went home and told my wife. I had inside information, and it poured down rain the day before the game. It was going to be low scoring, and we should bet the mortgage on the under.
That's right. You also... But I didn't say bet the mortgage, but I also said
the
best bet I felt, Kenneth, was picking Clemson to win, but no way were they winning by 28.
No, and the over-under, I just remember you saying your dad said it poured down rain. Flipping all over the field, and I thought, man, this is why I work for a living. Thanks, I appreciate it, Doc.
You should not be betting your mortgage. Don't ever bet your mortgage. But had you put $20 on Clemson by 25 to 30 points, it paid 50 to 1. That would have got you a grand. Just saying, that did come up on yesterday's show as well. But don't take information from this show or anybody else for that matter and go bet your mortgage on something. Please don't do that. Don't even jokingly do that. I don't want to. This show is supposed to be a diversion from your life. It is supposed to be fun and entertainment, and it's supposed to make you think and feel, and that's all good. But what I don't want is I don't want you saying, he said it was going to bet the under. Yeah, I saw at halftime, there was like 48 points scored by halftime, and I said, man, that Red Box Bowl didn't live up to this one. The Pac-12 championship game in the Red Box Bowl. I thought, you know, the stadium, it's not the stadium, guys. It was the Pac-12 teams. The ACC champion had no problem. The SEC team got bullied. That was kind of cool. Sorry about Alabama, Alabama Adriana. We haven't even addressed this. How much of the game did you watch before you flipped it off?
I watched the whole game, but I was a little distracted towards the end. I was more on my phone towards the end because I just had given up.
Yeah, it was done. You got the bald-faced truth. Our big splash is next.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth radio show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth radio show. Thanks for listening.